So for people on this call, let me just introduce myself. I'm Stephanie Gunning, and I do these monthly calls as a free public service for writers and creative types. And sometimes my calls are about publishing, and sometimes they're about creativity and the creative process. And a couple of months ago, I met Michelle and Robert Colt, and they invited me to attend their workshop in New York City, and it was phenomenal. I had such a great time, and I thought, this isn't just for actors. This equally applies to any kind of creative endeavor, for any kind of success strategy. And so we've been talking since then, and I've played around with a couple of the techniques that I learned, and had a really nice success with a few of them, and I've been enjoying it. And so I invited them to do one of my calls and invite the people on their mailing list to join the people on my mailing list. So here we are. Just to tell you a little bit about myself, if you don't know me, I come out of the publishing industry. I've been a freelance writer and editor for about 12 years now, which is hard to believe. I've written 17 books, and I teach people how to write book proposals. In fact, I have a four-week book course coming up starting June 20th that's also a phone course. And you can, if you're interested in that, the details will be emailed to you tomorrow. But basically, I'm getting a weird sound. What was that? Anyway, so let me tell you about Robert and Michelle. Robert and Michelle are the founders of a company called Acting Success Now. They teach a process that goes well beyond popularized approaches to success. Their revolutionary methods utilize the most powerful tools and technologies on the planet today for success and happiness, and the result is that you quickly learn to be, do, and have whatever success you choose. You can set whatever goal you want and work towards it using these tools that they teach. And these are techniques for working with your brain and your neural networks. And this is why I call this call Rewire Your Brain for Creativity, because that's really what happens. They teach you how to train your brain in a short span of time to be wider open to receive inspiration and more focused on forward momentum. So a lot of things fall away, and you just get a lot of clarity, and then these amazing accidents start happening where opportunities sort of pop up, and instead of being freaked out and resistant to them, you let them in. And so everything starts opening up, and it's really exciting. So they work with private clients, and they teach courses both in New York City and Los Angeles. I think the next one they have coming up is in L.A., isn't that right?
Los Angeles?
What are the dates of that?
29th and 30th and July 1st, and then we're back in New York on July 27th, 28th, and 29th.
Cool. So you know what? If you guys drop me an email, when I send out the MP3 file from this call to people who registered, I can give them those details if you like.
Great.
Sure.
So Michelle and Robert are trained in neuro-linguistic programming, hypnosis, hypnotherapy. They've studied with some of the most amazing teachers on the planet, Hale Dwoskin of the Sedona Method, John Assaraf, Bill Harris of Centerpoint. And they've incorporated all of these techniques into the system that they teach to actors and now writers. So we'll put myself in that category.
I think the seminar you went to, Steph, we might have had a doctor. I know there was a businessman, and we've had lawyers. So, you know, this really speaks to everyone. Because everyone is creative, whether they are, you know, focused on being on a creative field or not.
I think that's true. I think that anybody can benefit from opening their mind.
Sure.
I'm not sure exactly what you would what you would call it. I've been reading a book by a guy named David Hawkins, and I just wanted to read one little quote to begin with and see what you think of it. This is on creativity and genius, and he says that dedication of an unusual degree is required to achieve mastery. And in the simplest definition, one could say that genius is the capacity for an extraordinary degree of mastery in one's calling. A formula followed by all geniuses, prominent or not, is do what you like to do best and do it to the very best of your ability.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and, you know, we say in our, you know, we always say in our work very simply, you want to move towards what is energizing you, and you also want to be committed to excellence. It's a way of saying the same thing in a very simple way, because if you're just interested in excellence, you'll only do what's convenient for that. You know, if you're just interested in writing a great book or interested in having a great acting career, if you're just interested, you know, in creating, you know, a great business, you're just going to do what's convenient. But when you're committed, you'll do whatever it takes. And that really attracts to it inspiration. It's part of what dedication is. And it also invites the natural flow that actually the natural flow flows with the rhythm of one's heart's desires.
So would you say that what you're teaching people is how to master themselves?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. I think what we do is we point a direction towards the mastery that already exists. You know, it's like Michelangelo with David, you know, saying David was already there. I just had to chip away to reveal it. You know, to me, there's an inner mastery that's already in motion and that's already happening. That said, you know, we've been schooled out of it from early conditionings, through early learnings, away from that which we already know and which naturally moves through the energy pattern we call the brain and nervous system.
So you call it an energy pattern. Why is that?
Okay, sure. Well, let's take it from this angle. If we were to look at the body and really look into the body is basically made up of the elements. You would see that the body is made of earth, wind, fire, air, and space. In other words, the earth would be the flesh and the bones. The fire would be the heat in the body. We know the body is 80% water. The air would be the you know, the chi, the prana that we breathe in, and there's space. Now, if you look into that even further, if we were to look at this from physics, we would look at the atomic structure. We'd come and we'd see atoms. You go further, you'd go to more subatomic particles until you'd get to basically space. And that space is, you know, is known by the seers, the ancients, basically as intelligence, infinite intelligence. And this infinite intelligence creates vibratory patterns. Now I'm going to go back towards the front again. It creates vibratory patterns. And for instance, one of those vibratory patterns is it could be a galaxy, it could be planets. Vibratory patterns become what we call human beings. And to get more specific, you know, each organ that we have has a specific atomic vibratory pattern. It's a vibratory pattern. And the brain itself is a vibratory pattern. Now, you don't have to know electricity to turn a light on. It's not that we have to know how this exactly operates, but yet having a sense of how it plays can be very helpful. And as far as the way the mind creates, it creates with the use of the brain and neural pathways, can be inspiring for people.
Oh, my goodness, we're getting some sound in there.
Yeah, I hear that too. The reason I wanted to go back, by the way, to that place of space and intelligence is because this intelligence expresses itself in everything. And in us, one of the most evident places is through this amazing instrument of our brain and nervous system.
So it sounds to me like you're saying that we are a pattern.
Yes.
And in to my way of thinking, that means that we can change the pattern and alter our lives, but also that we're sort of unlimited.
Totally.
Because we're connected to this infinite vibration.
Well, you're right. It's a power source. You know, we are connected to the most powerful and most intelligent power source that expresses itself through the energy pattern that I could call me or I could call you. And, you know, a lot of people are making lots of efforts to create what they want, you know. And actually, the more they can understand how this really works, they can start relaxing because the very efforting is they don't have to make because it's already happening. They just need to know how to direct the process. They need to know how to focus the process because it's already in motion.
That's the thing that most people do, unfortunately. At one time or another, they get in their own way when there's no need to do that. It's a lot more effortless than most people realize. It's all about effortless creating.
For instance, for everybody on the call, I'm just going to ask a question. You know, are you right now seeing what's in front of you, or is seeing just happening? In other words, do you have to do it, or does it just happen? Do you have to hear, or does hearing just happen? If you really look at it very simply, you'll just see that it's happening. And the way that that's happening, there's a natural flow of creativity that's happening for us. The thing is, it's a matter of knowing how to direct it and how to focus it.
Okay, so let's get into sort of some of the things that we promised we'd talk about.
You bet.
It's so interesting. So in that vein of directing our focus and directing our creativity, which I think is where we're at.
It is.
What can you do to reduce the stress and the effort? You know, where does that anxiety and all of that get in the way?
Sure.
You
know? Well, let's talk quickly about focusing for a moment, because we talk about that all the time, and I think to just give a quick foundation for some people that may be hearing it anew or not, some people know this. The whole art is to focus on what you want and keep your mind, basically your focus off of what you don't want. And very simply, focusing on what you don't want is simply focusing on what you're worried about, what you're afraid of, or what you want to avoid. And the moment you're focusing on what you're worried about, afraid of, or want to avoid, you immediately give the brain a signal to create and attract more of those things, which is the source of feeling bad and the source of having stress.
Now, another important part of this that people sometimes don't realize is the emotion that they add to the way they're focusing. So if they're really focusing on what they don't want and they're doing it from a place of a lot of anger or fear, they're actually emphasizing it in a direction they really don't want to go in.
Right, and all emotion is energy in motion. That's emotion. So wherever there's emotion, it literally gets behind and creates momentum wherever the focus is. And thoughts are electric. We know that. And we know that emotions are magnetic. So basically, we're electromagnetic beings. And the way the thoughts are being generated with emotion is what we're literally attracting. Now, this is
so if you focus on what you want with emotion, you're going to get more of that.
Absolutely.
Yes, that's much more resourceful.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, and looking at this, because as we said, you know, this call is being, you know, basically dedicated looking at it from a brain perspective. So if you look at it from a brain perspective, the focusing process, what you're focusing on, every thought you think, it creates over time what's known as a neural pathway. With how the mind is. We create neural pathways. When you think a thought over and over, especially with a lot of emotion, it literally creates what I call a neural highway, which we know as habits. Now, the brain then is then wired with all these neural pathways. Now, if somebody, by the way, has an unconscious belief, meaning they're not aware of it, that, you know, they're not talented enough, they're not good enough, you know, it's just not in the cards for them, they literally in their brain have what are known as neural nets and neural pathways that are constantly going down that road. That's the road the thoughts will travel. Now, the basic problem with that is, well, basically Einstein said this, we can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we use when we created them. The reason is on a brain, on a neuroscience level, is you're literally trying to solve the problem with the same neural pathways that are there and have created it. You're literally traveling down the same pathways. You won't change it.
So you need to create a new highway for thinking.
A new neural pathway. Exactly. Mm-hmm. The art is in new neural pathways. By the way, you know, Stephanie, you, Michelle, and I have a dear friend in common, Hale Dwoskin. You know, that's why Hale says, by the way, can you let go of wanting to figure it out? because you're trying to figure it out with the same neural pathways that have got you where you are right now. Hence the saying, if you always do what you've always done, you'll always get what you've always gotten. On a neural science level, it's because the wiring has been reinforced. All the roads that are being traveled by new neurodes are producing those results. So basically, you literally have to create NEWRODES in the mind, in the brain, new roads to travel down that are resourceful.
You know what amazes me about this? And I just have to point this out. We are so efficient. Our brain is trying to move as quickly as possible the way that we ask it to.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Also, the really good news is that there's something called brain plasticity, which is the lifelong ability of the brain to reorganize neural pathways based on new experiences.
New experiences, new thoughts, new beliefs, new focusing. That's the beauty of this. We, you know, it's literally like inside we're living, there's a virtual reality happening, you know? And that virtual reality basically is like a movie being played, and it gets projected out there. So what we see out there is literally coming from this virtual reality of the movie being played via the neural pathways, via the neural nets. And then what we see out there is an innocent reflection of really what's being run inside through this whole process.
So let's say I'm a writer and I've never published a book before.
Right.
And I'm having trouble imagining how that will happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what is it I need to do with myself to create a new neural pathway?
Well, there's several things. I mean, one thing is you say you're having trouble imagining it. Now, let's say, you know, by the way, you know, there's different roads into this. Some people on this call, for instance, are very auditory, meaning that they respond to sound, auditory, you know. Some people are visual. They take in information visually. Some people are kinesthetic. They're feelers. So, you know, I just want to just touch on this. Everybody on the call knows about visualization, you know, imagining, visualizing. Some people can literally not visualize with visual images because they're kinesthetic. So visualizing for them is a feeling process. For others, it's an auditory hearing process. So number one, it's important to get a sense of the way you process information. That becomes, for me and Michelle, a very first step in this process.
Wow, that's very cool.
Yeah.
You're not saying we have to learn something new. You're saying we have to kind of take what we already do really well.
You got it.
Apply it
exactly.
To what we want.
Go back to David Hawkins. Stephanie, go back to David Hawkins' quote.
Yeah.
If you look at it, inherent in that is do something we already do very well.
Yep.
Right.
It's inherent.
And actually, Michelle, you were saying something about being resourceful, and I think I would love to hear you talk a little bit more about that attitude, because people know about resources, but I'm not sure they know that that's like a good way to get through life.
Well, it's so important. I mean, one of the things actually that just came to mind a moment ago for me, Stephanie, is that a lot of times when somebody's moving to a new level in their writing career or in their acting career or in whatever they do, they go through a natural state of chaos and reorganization. And one of the most resourceful things you can do when you're going through that process is not to resist it. It's a very, very natural part of the process. And what happens is so many people, when it's happening, they get anxiety coming up, they have depression coming up because they feel so overwhelmed by it. Whereas we found that our experience in the work we do with people, if you can really relax into that more and not resist it, knowing that you're reorganizing at a higher level in order to be able to basically handle something new in your life. There's this very, very cool part of the brain called the psycho-cybernetic mechanism, which is a really, really wonderful piece of information for people to understand. What it actually is it's an inner thermostat that lives inside of all of us. And it's basically the brain's counterpoint to your comfort zone. And we all have different internal temperatures for success, happiness, career, health, relationship, all the different areas of the life that we have in our lives. And what happens is the function of the psycho-cybernetic mechanism is to maintain the current internal temperatures that are set. So what's very interesting is that as we start to set new temperatures for ourselves, it's very natural to go into some chaos. And once
so
you
like
know
the,
that,
the, yeah.
it can be a much more comforting thing to know that, oh my goodness, you know, I've earned $50,000 more this year and I'm feeling a little bit uncomfortable about it. You know, something new just happened with my book. It got to a whole new level, and it's very natural for the body and the senses to go into some chaos over that. And to not resist it is much more resourceful than to resist it.
And what's also happening neurally in what Michelle just described is, for anything to live, it needs energy. You know, if somebody has a plant and they stop watering that plant, over time it's going to wither eventually and it's going to die. Well, if you're no longer feeding non-resourceful neural pathways, if you're not giving it attention, because where attention goes, energy flows. If you're not doing that, it starts withering away and it cannot exist. And as that's happening and a person is creating new neural pathways, there is the experience in the brain. In fact, there's a part of your brain called the amygdala, which has tremendous power over your perceptions. And it senses potential and it senses real stress. And it orders the release of neurotransmitters in response, so it causes people to have doubt, fear, and anxiety, especially when something is good that may be happening, because it's the unknown. But what's happening is new neural pathways are being born, and the brain is reorganizing. But as that's happening, the person wants to hold on to what was safe and comfortable, what felt like the known. And Michelle's been saying, the art is to basically just know this is a wonderful thing that's happening. What's being experienced is chaos. It's like Nietzsche said, one must have a bit of chaos in oneself to give birth to a dancing star. Well, one is basically giving birth to a dancing star within themselves.
Yes, and what's really interesting about these inner thermostats that are set is a lot of times they're the ones that we were around as children. They were conditioned into us. I'd love to give a personal experience around this. Many years ago, about 5-6 years ago, I decided to ask my sister what she was making as a social worker in Connecticut at that time. I had no idea. I'd never had a conversation with her around this. And I asked her, and what was fascinating was that she was making the same thing I was making at that time in my life, and it was the same amount of money that our mother made as a nurse.
Wow.
And I remember really being floored by that. And what was really fascinating was within the course of about 6 months to a year, my income started to go up quite a bit. And I remember when that first started happening, I went into a little bit of chaos around it. My choice of chaos at that time was anxiety, so I was having a little bit of anxiety coming up here and there. And what was wonderful was I knew what was happening, so I didn't go into this complete overwhelm with it. I was able to manage it and understand it in a way because I knew this information. That's why understanding that the psychocybinetic mechanism is a natural part of us can be extremely helpful to people when they start to move into their own chaos as they start to bring in more success in their lives.
Yeah, you know, for the people listening on this call, you know, your influences play a key part in this. You know, I recently talked about this at a seminar. I'm pretty sure everybody on this call knows who the New York Yankees are. You know, they have a psycho-cybernetic mechanism, Stephanie. Their temperature is set at the following: win championships. That's their temperature. Now, what's interesting, they used to be a dynasty in the old days, you know, in the 50s and 60s with the great, you know, earlier with Babe Ruth, Lou Gehrig, and, you know, the greats. And what happened is then after a certain time they went downhill, and all of a sudden an owner bought the team named George Steinbrenner. Now, whether people like George Steinbrenner or not, he was a ship magnate, and he was all about winning. His temperature as an owner was set at winning. Within three years, they were winning championships in terms of divisions and then the world championship. Why? The influence of that one person had such a profound effect, and it was the owner. So.
Right.
His temperature reset everybody's temperature around them. This is why we encourage people who are all about excellence to surround themselves with people that are excellent. If you're a writer, you know, of course, writers, you know, read great writers. Surround yourself. Go to places where writers hang out. If you're an actor, you know, we always encourage actors, find out where the working actors hang out. Where do they like to eat? Where do they like to be? Be around their vibration. See them in every play you can. Because you start literally vibrating where their temperature setting is, especially when you personally start start creating new neural pathways on your own.
So the good news is we have the ability to reset this thermostat, this psycho-cybernetic mechanism.
Absolutely.
Easily. And the really good news, I'd like to say this for everybody listening, if you ever experience yourself in chaos as you're moving forward, rather than go, oh, my goodness, I don't want this to happen, I would start celebrating. I would start saying, oh, my goodness, whoa, new neural pathways are being created. I'm about to have new resourceful results. This is that moment.
It truly
is
something to be celebrated.
My brain is going to support me, right?
Absolutely.
Your brain, and as Goethe said, the universe conspires to support you. Everything is supporting you once you direct it.
Now, I love something that you told me. You said that we have a part of the brain that operates as a Google search engine for us.
An inner Google search engine.
And I like the idea of sleeping and having it happen.
Yeah, like, by the way, some people on this call might be in front of a computer. You know, you could look at the Internet, you know, and it travels fast, especially if you have high-speed DSL, you know, and you've got a high-power computer. It's moving. Well, there's a part of your brain called the reticular activating system, the RAS, which is 800,000 times faster than Google, than your Internet. And it literally functions as Internet. And with each thought we're thinking, I'm telling you, we are sending out email after email, and it gets answered, and it comes back very quick by the results in our lives, the people, the situations, and circumstances that we're attracting. The good news is, as Stephanie, you were saying that you love, is, yeah, while you're sleeping, it's operating 24/7. This is why we encourage people to read their goals right before they go to sleep. If they're doing what we call intention statements, it's great to do it in the morning. It's great to do it right before going to bed.
Well, what's an intention statement, Robert?
Well, I don't like the term affirmation personally because the nature of the mind, and there's no way around this, is that it splits into duality. There's just no way around it. You can't have up without down. You can't have hot without cold, good without bad. It's the nature of the mind. And basically, if you start affirming one, it's actually in its own course pulling in the other. It's just, this is a subtle thing I'm talking about. One has to really do it to experience this. But if you set something out as an intention, you know, Wayne Dyer made it very popular and famous, the power of intention. Basically, it's a power of focus. If you set a statement out as a power of focus, it has a very different effect because you're basically focusing on an end result. And therefore, everything conspires to bring that into your life. The thing is, you don't know how it's going to happen. And for those on this call that want to figure out how it's going to happen, they'll actually block the happening of it.
Why does it block?
Because the conscious mind is so tiny and minuscule in comparison to the non-conscious and the infinite intelligence that some people call the quantum field that's surrounding and constantly that 24/7, literally powering and energizing, and it is infinite intelligence. If I think that my little mind personally can figure out what infinite intelligence can, well, nice try. It just
so it's
can't
like
figure
trying
it out.
To squeeze a camel through the eye of a needle, as you're saying.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, the place we see people, if they do get blocked, it's when they enter chaos and they're not understanding the power and the gift of chaos, and then they start really trying to figure out how it's going to happen.
Right. Yep. Because they get scared, and then...
Right.
And then they start trying to control everything.
Because the part of the brain, right, the amygdala doesn't, this is important, everyone, the amygdala. By the way, it's called amygdala because it looks like an almond. And in Greek, amygdala means almond. So the brain scientist said, oh, this looks just like an almond. We're going to call it the amygdala. And the amygdala does not like change. And it will release neurotransmitters anytime you try to change something in your life, anytime. And this is what's really wild. Any deviation from what's normal for you right now sets it off. And this causes a person to revert back to old patterns of thoughts and behaviors. So
even when it's something positive, that's the thing. even when it's something that could really move you forward, it's seen as change, and then this hormone, so to speak, and energy gets released into the body from the amygdala.
Biochemical
and
reaction.
So is there a way to practice being good at change?
Well, look it. For me, just knowing how the operating system works, if you start looking at it from that perspective, it's not personal. It's just the way it is. And if we relax into it and understand it and allow it to do what it's been beautifully designed to do, the change happens with greater and greater ease. Now, there are some things, you know, that are helpful with, you know, allowing it to move itself along. Some people like to meditate, you know, and if you look at meditation, it has a very interesting effect on the brain because you have the right and the left hemisphere. It's connected by the corpus callosum, and most people have what's known as brain lateralization, whether it's either right or left brain being dominant, right or left brain dominance. But what happens with people, for instance, that meditate, you know, I'm giving meditation as an example here. Over time, what starts happening is the right and the left hemisphere start coordinating in what's known as whole brain functioning. You know, people that are writing books, you know, people that are in the creative fields, all of you on this call often experience whole brain functioning, and you actually move.
I was going to say, kind of drop into it, that state where you're almost in suspended in time.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, you're probably in theta, by the way. When you feel the suspension of time, you're actually most likely in theta brainwaves. And artistic, very artistic types often experience lots of theta bursts.
Mm. Yeah. Another really fun thing I want to throw out to the group tonight, because I certainly found this to be very beneficial, and a lot of my clients do also, is that when you feel a little bit of chaos coming up, however it's manifesting for you, if you can interrupt it and break it, it can be very helpful. I have this fun technique I share with people that when I feel my own personal threshold being pushed and I recognize that it's happening, I do this cute sound, usually to Robert if he's around, or I even do it with myself, and it's this. Oh, I'm feeling a little bit of flutters. I've taken the word anxiety out of my vocabulary pretty much, and I call it flutters now because I think it's a much nicer word. And I'll do that. And you know what it does? It's actually really a rather brilliant thing to do because it actually interrupts that old pattern. And you hear a lot about in brain science how important that is. It puts an interruption in that old habit. And it brings a lightness to it, a little sense of humor to it, which is always a good thing to do. So I want to recommend that everyone who's on the call, when you feel your own threshold being pushed, you can play around with this and have fun with it because it brings a sense of humor to what's happening rather than going to a place of overwhelm and fear.
You know, Steph, I just had a thought that could be really helpful here for everybody too, and that's to have the experience and a tool that can really you asked, how can you use your brain in a way, you know, that really serves you? I'd like to share a very simple way to do it, and it's very powerful, and it's immediate. You know, there's a part of the brain in the deep limbic system. By the way, the deep limbic system, it's the bonding and mood control center of the brain. And if this point is off kilter,
mood control, you mean like emotions?
You got it. And if it's off kilter, people struggle with moodiness and negativity and things like that. Well, part of the limbic system is what's known as the reptilian part of the brain, right? And it's basically responsible for us feeling physically safe. If anybody would, you know, if you ever see reptiles basking in the sun, well, we like to bask. When we feel safe, we like to just be open and bask. And if you watch a reptile, you know, they're just so relaxed. Well, there's a mammalian part of the brain responsible for emotional safety. You know, when we feel emotionally safe, it opens us up for deep connections with one another. Now, why is this important? Well, whether you're writing a book, writing a script, whether you're working on a role, or whether you're meeting somebody, it's a very intimate relationship. And the safer one feels, the more open one is, and the more the creative flow and the connections can happen in deep, meaningful ways. Well, the most wonderful way to relax the reptilian and mammalian part of the brain, to have this wonderful shift in the deep limbic system, is to greet your work, to greet others and greet yourself with a sense of appreciation. Because appreciation immediately, vibratorily relaxes the reptilian and mammalian part of the brain and creates a feeling and sense of safety. If you're meeting
somebody... find something real to appreciate.
Don't take it, right?
No,
find something real. Now, here's the thing. The brain, the subconscious, can't tell what's the difference between what's real and imagined. So if somebody isn't feeling it, I recommend faking it till you do make it.
Oh, you do? Okay.
Oh, if it's not, in other words, you might want to, think of something you are appreciative of. But, the very act of creating it eventually ignites it happening. It just does. When I used to do certain intention statements, I didn't feel it for 2.5 weeks. I didn't believe it, but a point came that it just clicked in for me, and I was like, oh, my goodness, I really do believe it now. So faking it till you make it is effective.
Yeah. I know. If you're going to imagine how, for instance, if you have to make a phone call to a literary agent or a casting director, let's say, and we have a casting director on the call tonight, and you're in your head you go, oh, they don't want to hear from me. That's not even real. You made that up.
That's right.
And it makes you feel bad, and it makes you less effective. But
if
you think to yourself, I am solving their problem, and they are waiting to hear from me, it gives you a little boost of energy, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But look at, say the first sentence you said again. You said, they don't want to hear from me?
Yeah, something.
Okay, so let's say a person has that thought, they don't want to hear from me. Well, looking at what Michelle said, that's indicating their psycho-cybernetic mechanism, where that internal temperature is set. They say that statement, which creates a neurochemical response, and it alerts the amygdala. Oh, my God, danger, danger, danger. So now they're in fear, which basically is false evidence appearing real, activated by that very thought and focus. So they have a psycho-cybernetic mechanism that's a lower temperature setting for success. Now the amygdala is being rattled, right, just by doing that. And now they're not focusing on what they want. And because of that, they are literally not going to see any possibilities. They're going to be locked in reactive.
Or when they get on the phone with somebody, that person's going to feel them as nervous and, tentative, not clear, or whatever, right?
Well, exactly.
You create what you focus on, right?
Through the channels of communication, they will vibratorily pick it up auditorily. They will pick it up if they're kinesthetic. They'll feel it. It depends who you're talking to.
Mm.
All of this is communicated. You're absolutely right. It's all communicated.
So if we start working with our thinking processes and running our ourselves, our our instrument, I guess that's a good acting term. Running ourselves, running our system, our neural system, on different instructions that are more to our liking. At first we might feel uncomfortable, but in time those pathways will establish themselves and become dominant, right?
Absolutely. Also, remember what Robert said a couple of minutes ago. The unconscious doesn't know the difference between what's real and what's imagined. So if you're faking it until you make it in certain aspects, it's going to work, because it's going to be a direct message into the unconscious to get whatever it is you're focusing on or visualizing or affirming, even in the art of appreciation.
Basically, change your brain, you change your creative successful outcomes.
So you could say, I love and appreciate calling editors. I love and appreciate, people who take the time to watch me do auditions, or whatever.
Sure. Or, Michelle, why don't you, there's some people on the call that already know this, yet it's always good to hear this again, because we have gotten more emails from the following question than almost anything we've ever shared as far as positive results, because it bypasses the conscious filters.
Yep.
And Michelle, why don't you? you know, share.
No, this is the what I'm about to share with everyone is going to sound so incredibly simple, but I have to tell you, the results that you'll get from it are absolutely profound. What we're talking about here is something that we call the how can I question. And basically what happens is we ask the how can I question with our conscious minds. It goes down into the unconscious and out into the quantum field. Now, you can use the how can I question for all sorts of things. I'll just throw out a couple examples. How can I know what the best action to move this project forward is now? How can I meet a person to further the process in getting my book published? How can I find the right title for my book? These are all just examples of the how can I question.
How could I easily attract an acting manager with power, connections, who gets who I am and champions my career?
Yeah, now the other very, very important part of this process is the second part of the how can I question, and that's this. How can I be open to the people, places, and situations which is going to bring the proper information to me? Because as Robert was saying before, a lot of times our minds can be very, very limited in terms of what they can see as possibilities, so that you want to be very open to the information coming to you, through you, however it's going to be, from the place you're not even expecting it from. It's been our experience that a lot of times the inspiration, the answer, whatever it is, comes from somewhere you weren't even expecting that that would be where it would come from. That's just how it works.
You know, Stephanie, we recently, about 2 weeks this was ago, we received this email. It was very long because, in fact, it was the longest email I think we've ever received, and it was all about what this woman has achieved by just using that question. And it was remarkable.
Wow.
It was remarkable. We were both deeply touched because the question she used targeted the four quadrants in life. One is health. That's one quadrant. One is relationships. That's the second quadrant. One is success. That's the third quadrant. And the other is personal spiritual growth. Her entire email expressed how the How Can I has brought her a relationship that she focused on and one that she was specific about and really, really was the relationship that she had always dreamed of. And it surprised her how it came to her. In fact, she never thought she'd fall for anybody with blonde hair, and she did. Yeah. So you never know how it's going to come. You know? You never know. Her things around health were just extraordinary. Her success has blossomed at a level that she didn't even know was possible. And her own inner opening and blossoming is just so exquisite. And it's all for her. She mastered the use of how can I. She mastered it.
Well, I have, since I took your course a few months ago, I have found that that is probably the most powerful question I can ask to enhance my creative capacity. Because I think asking a question by its very nature opens the mind.
Absolutely.
And when I'm writing a chapter of a book, and I'm not sure what the next part of it should be, I literally have to ask a question. If I don't ask a question, it's almost like it becomes a painful process writing. But if I start asking questions, maybe it's how can I, you know, how can I express this next thought the best? Or how can I research this? Where can I go? How can I get an inspiration? Who can I talk to? How can I find a person to talk to that'll give me, you know? So it sort of has a lot of permutations for me at any rate.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and Stephanie, you know, I mean, you also know the power of intention statements. You know, we constantly get emails of people that really master the formula that we teach, and like the girl who mastered How Can I, the results are staggering. You know, this is where, by the way, let's bring in David Hawkins' quote again. This is about dedication. When one is truly dedicated to creating a masterpiece with their life, when their life has meaning for them, you know, when they're loving to be, then they will be in dedication. They'll have that commitment. And when that's there, they'll, whether it's choosing to do intention statements or whether it's choosing to do and how can I, or it's choosing to learn processes of releasing, naturally releasing limitations, it becomes effortless because it's basically a love affair at that point.
That's a great way to look at creativity. To me, creativity is sort of the highest expression of spirit.
Hmm.
I think if you had arrived at a moment in time when all problems were solved, let's say world hunger, et cetera,
mm-hmm.
if you thought about your own life and all the things you think are your problems, if those things were removed, what would you do? And to me, the answer is always, I would create. I might bask in the sun like a lizard a little bit. But after a while, I go, okay, I think I'll create something.
Yeah, you know, for me, everywhere I look, I'm personally staggered by creativity, personally. You know, that we're having this conversation as an expression of creativity to me is just exquisite. You know, when I walk, by Riverside Park, you know, when I see a robin, or I just see how literally life communicates to itself on a simple walk. It's staggering looking at the stars in the heavens, so to speak. You know, the way that the Earth is right now revolving at 900 miles an hour, 900 miles an hour, and because of the gravitational pull, we're relaxed right now. We're not falling off the planet. My heart's beating. I'm not doing anything. I mean, the basic creativity that is continually happening and flowing, to me, is staggering.
It's really beautiful.
It really is.
Well, what do you think about seeing if anybody has a question?
Sure.
We'd love it.
We love that.
I just want to remind people that Robert and Michelle regularly do workshops in both New York and L.A., and I'm going to send an email to everybody who registered for the call. It'll probably go out on Saturday because that's the day I'm going to get home to my computer, and send this MP3 file so you can listen to it again if you want to in your convenience, and that'll have that information. And I regularly do phone calls like this one. And I teach courses on book proposal writing and the like. Next month's call is going to be called Amp Up Your Writing Career. And I think that the methods are drawn from quantum science, decoherence, a lot of interesting stuff. So people who enjoy that part of this call may enjoy that as well. But you're now on my mailing list, so you'll get that. So I'm just going to... unmute the telephone.
Hey, Steph, if I could say one thing before you unmute the call. One of the things we teach at our seminars, by the way, is the importance of being excellent at what you do. And the most successful people that we've ever met, they play at what they do, and if it's something that's not play for them, they hire out others who it is play for, and they hire out others who are excellent at what they do. You know, you were just talking about, you know, what you offer. I mean, I know you've been very gracious and generous to have us on this call, but I'd like to say for those writers out there, I mean, you know, you're one of the very best at what you do at such a level of excellence, hence, you know, the bestsellers that have come through you. So I just want to say that, you know, you're an example of what we share with a lot of care and passion at our seminars of moving towards people that have excellence. That can bring you to that level.
I second that. Absolutely.
Well,
thank you for playing with me. this is a lot of fun for me.
Us too.
It's a lot of fun.
Us too.
Well, here's my suggestion. I will unmute the telephone, and if there's somebody who has a question, I think we could probably take maybe three or four questions if we limit the length of the question. So just call out your name and ask your question, and we'll try to get a few in. How about that?
Sounds good.
Here we go. Anyone with a question? Ooh, I know they're out there.
I can hear them. I can hear them breathing.
We love questions. And by the way, somebody who asks a question, it could help somebody else who might have the same question.
If you have it, somebody else does too.
Hi, my name is Susan Bragg.
Who's this?
Susan Bragg.
Hey, Susan.
Hey, how are you? My question is a little bit, it's more of a statement of affirming what you guys have been talking about. As I was driving tonight, preparing for to listen to you, I had the realization that I've been keeping myself in that part of the brain that feels scared about a situation in my life, which is quitting my job. And I thought, well, just quit. And I felt so free and so happy. And there are other circumstances that are allowing me to do that right now, but I was resisting the chaos. And then I thought, I'm feeling so free and so happy at this thought. Why am I not just going forward? And then all the chaos came in, and I was like, whoa. And I thought, you know, I can choose that freedom instead. And I just flipped right out of it, and I chose the freedom. And it's, which part of the brain am I working with? That's my question, I guess, when I'm doing that little flip.
Well, at first what happened was you experienced the amygdala kick in. And the amygdala is the almond-shaped part of the brain.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened was there was a deviation from the norm, you know, even if it's quitting, even if it's something you really want.
Yes.
And what also happened was, these systems are intimately connected and synergistic. And an intimately connected to your psycho-cybernetic mechanism, the temperature setting, which wants to stay at a certain temperature. Hence, like the alarm was set, you know, you said, I'm quitting. And all this chaos comes up because you're about to move into change. And neurally speaking, from neural pathways, this means that there's a whole new movement. And basically, if you think of the word neural pathway, it's literally a new you being formed, literally.
Mm-hmm.
And
literally.
Isn't it interesting that you were driving when all this was going on?
Yes.
That's right.
What was exactly happening, though, when she flipped to the more peaceful state of being?
Acceptance happened.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
What happened, didn't it, Susan?
Yes.
Yeah, that was acceptance. You know, what happened was there was a resisting the chaos. By the way, the only way any of us can ever suffer is by resisting what is. You know, I know of a very wise man that used to, in India, how he learned how to let go. He would jump into these huge, what were considered very dangerous whirlpools, because he knew, he was very smart, he would study, watch whirlpools, and he noticed at the very bottom it was very tiny and things would pop out. So he just jumped in a whirlpool one day and didn't resist it. He let it take him, and in moments he was popped right out of the bottom. Well, as a metaphor, what happens when we're in whirlpools of chaos, we fight it, and we fight it, and we exhaust ourselves, and literally we get adrenal fatigue. There's a psychosomatic response to it. But if we relax into the chaos of change, we move very quickly to the other side, which is actually acceptance and peace. And it takes courage to do that.
Yeah.
So, Susan, did you quit your job?
I have to write the letter tonight.
See, that's where Susan
is. Just a shared experience. Hi, Robert, Michelle, it's Michael.
Hey, Michael.
Hey, Michael.
How are you guys doing?
Nice to hear your
doing
voice.
Great.
Great to talk to you. It sounds like there's two sides, sort of a left brain, right brain. There's people who took your course, and there's people who haven't. And for those who haven't, I strongly recommend it. But a quick comment for Susan. I had an incredible experience that changed my life after a close friend of mine died suddenly. And in fact, I wrote a book about it. And I couldn't one day, so it's so changed my life. I had a really good job, what you would call a good job. I didn't have to quit. I was making a lot of money and everything. It was almost harder to quit because things were so good. And then I decided to quit. And then, like 10 minutes before I told the president I was leaving the company, I had a client. Once I decided to do that and risk everything, the whole world opened up for me.
You know,
but I had to make that decision, and it was very, very hard. And I struggled with it. But as soon as I made the decision and as soon as I did it, my entire world changed.
Well, hence, mm-hmm. you know, that saying, you know, makes me think of that saying, jump and the net will appear.
That's
yeah,
exactly
that's
what happened.
That's on my refrigerator.
It's on your refrigerator. Isn't that interesting,
okay.
Susan? So.
Be bold and unstoppable forces will come to your aid.
But that's the ride I've been on for 2.5 years, every moment, from just literally jumping without a net.
Hmm.
And every day and every moment has just been so exciting and amazing because of that.
Michael, can I interrupt? Because we only have
sure.
a couple more minutes, and I want to see if there are more questions.
Thanks, Michael.
Does anyone else have a
sure.
question?
Michael.
Neural pathways up here.
Who's that?
The neural pathways down there.
Okay, maybe that's not a question.
I couldn't hear what they said.
Hi, it's Marjorie. I have a question.
Great, Marjorie.
Hi. Thank you so much. I'm just honored to hear all three of you. And I'm noticing, coming from a visual where I have to have pictures of everything, I'm noticing now more, I'm truly feeling the changes and not so much the visual anymore. And it is very scary. Have you, when you like at a threshold or crossing those neural pathways and you're more visual and then you're exploring kinesthetic, does that show up to like you palpitate, or I mean, is that like part of the process, or
certain physical sensations, Marjorie?
Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, especially if you're dealing with certain kinesthetic responses, it's very normal to go through different body sensations.
Do you resist it though if you're used to your visual? I sense that. I'm so
well,
visual.
Are you resisting it? Is the question.
Yes and no.
Right.
I used to say yes, but I notice both the yes and no now, if that makes sense.
Makes total sense.
Okay.
It's a great sign, actually.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
Marjorie, it's a muscle, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the process of resistance is an acquired process. We learn it, and it can be unlearned.
Okay.
You know, you can learn to go with the flow. It's kind of like, you know, when little kids are about to jump off a high diving board the very first time. I mean, I remember when I did it, it took me 7 days. I'd work my way up, and I'd run back down the ladder.
Aww.
And I'd watch these other kids do it. And all of a sudden, look at this, though. I watched them, and their influence affected my neural pathways. It started to connect.
Okay.
It actually takes 21 to 30 days to create new neural pathways. Well, I had all these kids doing it, and all of a sudden I got on the top. And just as, you know, Michael was describing jumping and the net will appear, within 2 days I was doing jackknives, you know, and doing backward dives. But it was literally taking that jump and created new neural pathways.
Can you feel the response before you auditorily say it or visualize it? Has that ever happened to you all, to you, Michelle, or Robert?
Say that again.
Kinesthetically in your body, feel the change or the answer
yes.
before you sometimes go auditory or visual.
Absolutely.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Because look at your knowingness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is expressing itself directly through your kinesthetic response.
Okay.
Through your feeling self. Directly. Absolutely.
Yes.
Thank you.
And I just want to say one more thing about that, Marjorie. If you're feeling, you know, certain responses and sensations in the body, the best way to handle that is just to acknowledge it, allow it, and welcome it as much as possible.
I can share it by feeling that I'm getting more voiceover work with an agent I have, and it's happening just by feeling the body and humanizing the script.
How wonderful.
Yeah.
How creative.
I offer that out
very,
to everybody.
Cool.
It's cool.
Thanks,
we have reached our hour.
I think there's one more question, Steph.
It's Jennifer. Hi, you guys.
Hey,
Jennifer.
Hi. For me, what I'm going through is
a different one.
Can you hear me?
One after the other.
I'm creating new neural pathways where I experience something new and I enjoy it, and you know, I go through the fear of it, and then. The consistency is not there yet. It's like it's not locked in, so I tend to go to fall back into the old pattern.
Mm-hmm.
Peter took their class, and she said, I think this is my
right.
So
that's
frustrating. I'm like, I feel like stuck in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like I'll go to the new, and it feels great, and yes, and then either guilt comes in or
familiarity comes in, and then I go to the old, and I'm like, shit, I'm back where I started again. So it's like I'm doing two steps forward, one step back.
Right. Well, the thing is, it takes the mind, Jennifer, time to catch up with transformation. So what's happening is, as you're moving forward, the mind's not catching up right away because you are creating new neural pathways, because I know you, and I see the results. Well, what's happening, though, is that the old habits are still echoing.
They're just echoing.
Yeah. And my suggestion is...
He's going to end up any minute.
Ignore them. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah, I just muted the background.
Oh.
Okay, great.
So if Jennifer can hear this, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, Jennifer, what looks like a step back, you know, sometimes, you know, as we like to say, sometimes what looks like you're down is really going upward. And what you're describing also has a quality of the description of chaos to it for me, from the description. And it's just that amygdala, it's just that psycho-cybernetic mechanism that's trying to hold itself in the place that it's comfortable at. And I promise you, we see this all the time. By the way, everyone, this isn't a minute steak, you know? Look, using a metaphor, this is about a banquet. And, you know, as you know, it takes some time to create a beautiful banquet and a beautiful meal. But with persistence and staying on course, Jennifer, that will lessen and lessen, and something really will take hold, and the new neural pathways will be the direction and the way you'll travel.
I also want to interject that having compassion for yourself when you see that happening and you're experiencing it is also extremely beneficial in all kinds of ways.
And Jennifer, you know all about how to let go and how to release into things. And by utilizing that ability, just consciously when it's coming up and happening, that will facilitate the movement as well. It just takes a little time for everyone who's still on this call. Habits die. Sometimes it takes a bit of time because they've been there for many, many years and they've been neurally wired to be there. They do die because we know that neurons that fire together, wire together. And we also know when they're no longer firing together, they no longer can wire together. And you create a new identity.
And on that note...
Sure.
Is beautiful because we're constantly creating a new identity for ourselves that's bigger, better, more creative. That actually sort of is the definition of creativity, creating something new through us, right?
Yes.
So I think this was a great call. I learned a lot. I hope everybody else did. And I just want to thank you very much for coming on and sharing your insights. I wish we could talk longer.
Well, thank you for having us, Stephanie. We really appreciate being here with you
and
with everyone else on this call, very much so.
Yes,
I wish everybody great success, and talk to you soon, I guess.
As do we.
Good night.
Good night.
Good night. Bye.
Bye.